My heart has no words. My eyes have no tears left. Mind had done gone crazy. Went off and married my fears. Now I'm standing here with nothing left to tell you. I'm standing here with nothing to prove. I got nothing to prove.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Mormon Expression Voices. This is Heather, and today I am not your host. I am the interviewee, and Miss Amy of the Mormon Expression podcast is going to be doing my interview. Hello.
Hello, everyone.
We're sitting here. I'm drinking chai tea, the only outward expression of my apostasy. All my other apostasies written on my heart. And you're drinking espresso, I guess?
Yep, I made a little mocha in my little espresso machine.
And today, I guess, we're going to talk about me. So I will turn it over to you to conduct my interview.
So, Heather, our Mormon Expression audience knows you from Mormon Expression Voices primarily.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But previous to that, you were a regular panelist on the podcast.
Correct.
And if you can refresh our listeners on some of the podcasts that you've been on in the last probably, what, 8 months, 9 months?
I officially joined Mormon Expression in January of 2010.
Oh.
And I haven't been on that many episodes. I was on the first episode that I was officially on was the Handbook of Instructions. Maybe for Dummies. I don't remember if it had that title or not. Then I was on a conference review, DNC 8 and 9. Gosh, I can't remember all the episodes I've been on. I've been on maybe 10.
We've been on a few together.
Yeah, the DNC 8 and 9 is the one where we met.
Right.
I did an interview of David Campbell, the author of That American Grace book. I did that for Mormon Expression.
So you're an integral part of how we do things, yes?
Yeah, I guess now, yeah.
Yeah.
I started out as just an every once in a while invited panelist and then started attending the production meetings and, you know, became an insider.
I've heard your exit story in bits and pieces, but I'm kind of looking forward to getting it in one fell swoop.
Like one big, huge, long telling with lots of crying.
I hope to
and gnashing of
teeth. I'm going to Barbara Walters you and you shall cry.
I might.
So why don't you start off with early years? Were you born into the church?
Yes. My parents are both born in the covenant. I had a typical Mormon family. Grew up on a farm in southern Idaho that my dad grew up on and his father grew up on. So it was in the family for quite a long time. My mom, you know, is a Relief Society president type. My dad's always been in the bishopric. Went to church every Sunday. We didn't do family home evening. We didn't do scripture study. We didn't do family prayer.
You would say you were a TBM family,
though.
Oh,
yeah, definitely. I think we were just like most families where if they tried to do those things, it was like a big hassle and a fight all the time. So it just wasn't done. But we went to church on Sundays. They made us pay tithing on any money we got, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, we were definitely TBM. I don't know. I think we were just too busy to do family home evening maybe. And my mom worked at night, so she was always gone by the time that family prayer would roll around in the evening. And I don't know. We had a couple of family home evenings and they were complete and utter disasters.
Yes.
Yeah. The first one we had, I remember, was about food storage. And that ended with my sister and I bawling about the end of the world and being terrified and, you know, that kind of thing. So my parents gave us scriptures when we were baptized. They expected us to develop our testimonies.
How did you feel about being a Mormon? Did you feel like it's the greatest thing in the world? Were you kind of not really sure what that meant?
I was not a particularly thoughtful kid.
I have a hard time believing that, Heather.
I wasn't. I was that obnoxious, loudmouth, doesn't have a brain in their head type of kids. You know what I mean? Like if you ever gone out in public and you're like, oh, that person just shut that kid up. I think I was that kid.
Okay.
Honestly, I didn't really think about things. I just was like, blah, 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 whatever. I didn't think about being Mormon. It just was something that you were. I remember figuring out, I don't know, maybe the first grade, that the whole world wasn't Mormon. I remember sitting in the chapel on a Sunday being like, there are people who aren't going to church, a Mormon church right now. And remember thinking how weird that was. But I never had any really deep thoughts as a kid about whether I should be a Mormon or not. Even when I got baptized, it was just something you did when you turned 8.
Right.
I didn't really put a lot of thought into anything until I became a teenager, I don't think.
So that was going to be my next question. When did things start to become thoughtful for you? When did you start to feel this was something a little more serious than just your average garden variety, we go to church on Sunday religion?
Probably junior high-ish, when I started taking science seriously, when I started learning about science. As a believer, I was always a believer because it made sense. I always thought that it was literally true because it made logical sense. And I remember learning about evolution and accepting evolution right away and deciding that it was how God created the earth. And then when evolution got to a certain point, he put Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. So evolution was for everything but humans.
Okay.
I remember learning about polygamy when I was 12 or 13-ish. I don't think I even knew up to that point that Brigham Young had more than one wife. I don't know how I heard about it, but somehow it came into my consciousness that polygamy was practiced. And I was fed those lines about, you know, there weren't enough men. The men died along the way type of a thing.
Right.
And it was just to take care of old women and widows. I remember standing in the hallway outside of the beehive room waiting to go into class and thinking that that just made absolutely no sense, because if that were really what was going on with polygamy, they wouldn't have ever stopped doing it. And my dad would be married to some old widows to take care of them financially. So I figured that the answer was an adult answer and therefore something they weren't going to tell me. It was just like none of my business because I was a kid type of a thing.
You wouldn't understand anyway.
Exactly. But from that point forward, it bugged me.
It bugged you because you didn't know the adult answer?
Because it had an implication on the value of a woman and what her eternal role was. And so I never liked it. It was never something that I was going to accept. As a kid, I always felt like it was something that I wouldn't have to accept because they stopped doing that a long time ago type of a thing.
So you weren't really up on your eternal obligations?
No, that came in high school.
Okay.
So even though I was like thinking about religion, it always was, like I said, because it made sense logically. You know, what makes more sense about heaven? That you're going to sit on a cloud and play a harp? I mean, I know that's a really simplistic explanation of the Christian heaven, but the Mormon heaven, you had a purpose. You had something that you'd be doing. There were things to look forward to.
Yeah, you had tasks.
Yeah. It just made more sense to me than a heaven of nothing but like worshiping God, right, type of stuff. So I never really had spiritual moments, I guess. I know there were times, like at girls' camp, when they'd put you around the fire and everybody would start bearing their testimony and you'd start crying, but I'm sorry, that's not a witness of the Holy Ghost. That's
Are
a hormonal,
sure?
Yes. That is a hormonal teenager. Well, since now I no longer believe that there is a Holy Ghost, that's as close as anybody ever gets, in my opinion. But that was like the extent of my spiritual experience. I never felt like my prayers were answered.
What kind of prayers were you having? Or were you giving, offering?
Well, oh gosh, I just thought of something that might, I mean, it will discredit me in the minds of believers, maybe.
Believers aren't listening. And if they are, they already sympathize.
As a teen, I don't remember asking for anything specific as like a kid or a teenager, but I always felt like I was talking to the ceiling. I never felt like my prayers were going anywhere or anybody was listening.
Okay.
My dad has really bad diabetes. And there was a time when I was a freshman in college that he was losing his eyesight and they expected him to be blind by the time I came home for Christmas. And I started having really intense prayers, crying like, I'll do whatever you want if you just make it so my dad won't lose his sight. And he went in and had his neck surgery and the doctor was like, well, we can't explain what's going on, but your eyes are getting better. He has like a little blind spot in one eye, but he wears glasses when he drives and otherwise he can see just fine. So as a believer, that was a miracle. God had answered my prayers and my dad had been the recipient of a miracle and that his eyes had healed in an inexplicable way.
Is that how you interpreted it?
Then yes, I did.
And was that uplifting? Did that like bolster your testimony?
Yeah, there was something else that happened with my grandmother. I don't know, this is kind of off track, but I remember telling people that I know that the church is true. One, because my father was the recipient of a miracle. And two, my grandmother knew she was going to die. I don't really can't explain why my grandmother knew she was going to die, other than maybe she was not feeling well all day long and she knew the outcome was going to be bad because she wasn't taking care of her health. My father, I think maybe they just misdiagnosed him to begin with, now that I'm not a believer. But yeah, when I was a believer, I used those things as tangible proof that the church was true.
But every other prayer you had had up until that point was just not of interest to Heavenly Father as you knew him.
I never really had what I would consider a confirmation of the Spirit outside of those weepy testimony meetings with teenage girls.
Right.
So even when the stuff that I thought were miracles were present in my life, I didn't really have an emotional or what I felt was a spiritual confirmation. It was, again, it just made sense.
It seemed like a logical conclusion to what you had done prior.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your seminary years. I know those were some interesting times for you.
My junior and senior year, I had a seminary teacher who I had hated him from the time I had him until my disaffection. I hated him.
Hated him.
Hated him. To the point where when I went to my freshman year of college, my roommate was going to seminary and I wasn't. And she talked me into going to this seminary class. And she registered both of us and she brought me the registration paper. Well, it just had his first initial and then his last name. And I thought my seminary teacher had become an institute teacher. And I was like, hell no, I am not going to another class with that guy. But then I found out it was his older brother, actually. So, like, I hated this guy. Now looking at it as an apostate, he was telling the truth. Like, he was being honest. Well, he was crazy TBM in some ways. He told people it was against the word of wisdom to use cough syrup. Basically said that people who got tattoos were going to hell, that kind of thing. He claimed that he would be one of my judges because he was I can't remember the term, something about Israel.
A judge in Israel.
Because he had had priesthood authority over me as my teacher. And so he would be at my judgment seat along with every other priesthood holder who had authority over me to decide if I had lived up to my obligations or whatever.
Wow.
But I argued with him all the time.
What did you argue with him about?
Just that God wasn't as awful as he painted him out to be, that God's not going to send somebody to hell just because they got a tattoo when they weren't a believer, or that that we weren't Christian scientists, and so there's no reason we can't have medicine. It's not against the word of wisdom, that kind of thing.
So you were probably his favorite too.
I don't think so. I quit going in November of my senior year.
Quit going to seminary.
Seminary, yes.
Which is a big deal.
Yeah. And he never called my parents. He never told anybody. And he graduated me from seminary with straight A's.
Wow.
So I'm pretty sure he was just glad I was not there causing trouble anymore. We must have been doing like church history because we were talking about like Emma Smith and stuff. And we were in the DNC. He basically said that polygamy was a requirement of the celestial kingdom. And that we read like DNC 132, and he said something like, I don't want to insert my own doctrine here, but Emma Smith was told if she didn't accept polygamy that she'd go to hell and all the rest of you will too. It was really upsetting. I left crying really bad and I never went back. Up to that point in that seminary experience, that year even, I had been going through a phase where I was determined to be a good Mormon kid.
What motivated that? You just wanted to be, what made you feel like you wanted to be the good Mormon kid?
I felt it was time that I got my testimony, I think.
Okay.
Looking back, I stopped listening to music except for churchy type music. I don't know how some of my CDs survived that phase, but I didn't throw them away. I just quit listening to them. But I would drive to and from school listening to church music, and I read my scriptures diligently and I prayed, and I was determined I was going to, you know, I felt like I was becoming an adult and it was time I like get my testimony in order.
So you were seeking fervently a testimony.
Yeah. And that at the beginning of that, I'm pretty sure it was the beginning of that year. I still have this little thing that we wrote on. We had a seminary building because I grew up in Southern Idaho. There's a lot of kids. We had release time and there was a seminary building across the street from the school, but the stake center was also right there. And so we went over to the stake center and we each were supposed to go into our own room where we could privately read. I don't know why. I'm one of these people. It's like, oh, no, it wasn't 2005. It was 2006. No, it was 2004. It had to have been at the end of the school year because it was at the end of the Book of Mormon. So it had to have been the end of my junior year. We were supposed to go into a room privately, read Moroni 4 and 5 and pray. And he promised us that we would like, some of you are going to have visions and like, you know, whipping it up into that kind of thing. So I went into the room and I read Moroni form, whatever, prayed about it. Nothing. Prayed about it. Nothing. And he had given us these pieces of cardboard that had gold foil on them. And we were supposed to write with like a cap of a pen. So it kind of engraved it, you know, make it all dramatic like that. And I basically just said, like, you know, the church is true. Like, I didn't receive any sort of spiritual witness. I was, again, just like, well, it makes sense. You know, it's true. And that at the end of that day, my sister was like, so what was your experience like? Because I had been being so devout and so I'd been acting so spiritually that she thought for sure I'd be one of those people that had a vision, you know, and I had received absolutely nothing.
Were you heartbroken?
I was disappointed. I think I was really disappointed, but I think I just chalked it up to, you know, the church is true. You don't need...
You didn't feel like it was anything you had done or not done?
No, because I wasn't doing any... I wasn't sinning up to that point. I mean, I wasn't a rebellious kid. I didn't do anything bad. And I was going to church and I was reading my scriptures and I was fasting and I was doing all the things I was supposed to do up to that point. So I didn't think it was any... I didn't think it was my fault. I just thought for whatever reason, God chose not to give me the witness or whatever at that time.
Hmm.
So that really devout phase fizzled out. You can't keep it up, I don't think, unless you're getting some sort of a return on it. And I wasn't really getting a return on it. My senior year started and I had that, class where he was like, you know, you're all going to hell if you don't accept polygamy. And I was like, that was it. I was 18. I was 18 because I, at that point, decided I was going to resign from the church.
Okay.
And I went into this really bad depression where I just didn't want to be a part of an organization that had that poor of a eternal role for me, I guess, even though I still believed it was true. And my parents eventually picked up on the fact that something was wrong and they like beat it out of me. Basically, I didn't want to volunteer it, but they, I don't know. My parents were the type that would sit you on the couch and would like, it would be a huge lecture and they would get it out of you, you know? And so I told them that I didn't want to be chattel in eternity and I had no desire to be a part of an organization like that. And I wanted to resign. And
did you tell them in the same way that you're telling me now, very matter of fact, or was...
Probably not. I was quite... My dad used to tease me about being a drama queen. I'm sure I was very emotional and I was a teenager. I didn't know how to explain things. I was probably being quite dramatic and...
Well, that's a dramatic thing to explain to your parents that you want to leave the church.
Yeah.
And these are the reasons why.
Yeah.
But you still believed it was true.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was that scary for you?
No, because I didn't believe I'd go to hell. So it was just like I accepted that I wasn't good enough to be the kind of Mormon I should be because I had tried. I had been so devout. It didn't work.
So there was something in you that you thought was lacking.
Oh, yeah. I have always kind of felt like it was my fault, like my inability to be a good Mormon.
Yeah.
Clear up until my disaffection.
Which was, so you stopped going to seminary. You told your parents you were going to leave the church. Mm-hmm. You didn't leave the church.
No, that night my mom, she was trying to make me feel better about polygamy. And she told me that she just knows that there's something important about being the first wife. And that's why it's important to get married in this life. And that she would just let God work out the rest of it in eternity.
Wow.
That means your eternal happiness is based on the sacrifice of other people. You know what I mean? Like other women have to give up what you get in eternity for you to have what you have in eternity. And I don't like that answer at all. But my dad talked me out of it by saying that it's not something I have to face now. And we always have our free agency. So I shouldn't make any hasty decisions until I have more knowledge and until I'm actually confronted with that problem. Because at that time I could make a more informed decision. And so basically just don't be hasty. Just, you know, don't be a drama queen and overreact and cast off your blessings now, wait until you're older and, you know, actually have to face the situation and then you can make the decision. And if at that time you don't want to practice polygamy, you won't have to.
And that probably appealed to your logical mind.
Yes, it did. It did.
You're like, yes, I don't have to deal with this right
exactly.
now.
Exactly. But the solution didn't solve the problem for very long because by that point I had figured out celestial polygamy and was convinced at that point, as I am to this day, that according to Mormon theology, polygamy is required for exaltation in the celestial kingdom. And that, I'm trying to figure out how to explain this, that then caused me problems with going to the temple. The temple has always creeped me out. Uh-huh. But figuring out celestial polygamy added another layer to the problem. I have had many conversations with people who have tried to convince me that we don't know what the future holds, including eternity, and that I shouldn't be worried about what's to come then. I should only be worried about what's pertinent to my salvation now. But I try to be an ethical person. And the more that I looked at temple wedding or temple marriage, uh-huh. Getting sealed to somebody for time and all eternity, I started to battle with myself about whether or not it was honest to date somebody and fall in love with them and agree to marry them and go through the temple and make those covenants with my fingers crossed behind my back. Because I had that idea planted in my head by my father that I could make that choice at some point in the future. But is it fair to say to a man, yeah, I'll get married in the celestial kingdom, I'll make that covenant, and then get to some point in eternity and be like, my bad, sorry, I'm actually backing out of this? I felt like, at the time, I felt like a celestial bound man deserved a celestial bound woman, and that it would be ethically wrong of me, or morally is not the right word, ethically wrong of me to marry a man knowing that I would never, ever, ever take that final step into exaltation. And so from that point that when I had that conversation with my parents as a teenager, I battled with, can I accept temple, going through the temple? Can I live with myself and make those covenants, even though I know at some point I'm going to back out of them? And that gave me a lot of anxiety about the whole thing, for lack of a better term. It just added fuel to the fire, or it added to the problem, I guess I should say.
So now you're in your 20s, and my guess is your shelf was getting a little heavy.
Maybe you could explain it that way. It was the only thing on my shelf for a very long time, all the way through my 20s.
So, like, so the lack of spiritual confirmation wasn't on your shelf?
No, I don't think so. I can't think back clearly now and remember whether or not it was on my shelf, or if I ever questioned, like, why don't I ever have a spiritual confirmation? Mm-hmm. I think I just chalked it up to logic appeals to me more than emotion. So I have the logical understanding and the rest of it doesn't matter, I guess.
Yeah.
When I got into college, I tried to attend church, but I swear it seemed like every time I would go, in some way, polygamy would be thrown in my face. And at the time, as a believer, I felt like it was the devil trying to keep me away. It was like a hurdle I needed to go get over, a mountain I needed to get over, where he knew that was a sticking point for me. So he would make sure, and how does this even make sense? Like, he would make sure that it would somehow be a thorn in my side every time I went.
So it was almost like church was your personal Gethsemane.
Yeah. I mean, I remember sitting in Sunday school, especially when it would get to like a lesson on DNC 132, and be like, why aren't we talking about this entire section? Why are we completely ignoring the rest of this, you know? And so it would just make church miserable for me. I would get distraught about it. And so I would go through phases in college where I tried to be active, and then I would just like give up on it and go back to being completely inactive, because it was just, it was too painful.
Talk to me a little bit about, when you say that is so painful, what is it bringing up for you? Because I can see it on your face.
I decided that I wasn't going to get married in the temple. And because I still believed, I hate that I get emotional over this, but I decided I wouldn't get married at all because I was a good Mormon and that getting married in the temple is what you did. So I decided at like 19 that I was going to live my life alone and not have children, because having children outside of the covenant is wrong. So I entered a really, really bad depression, and I didn't care about my life. I didn't care about where I ended up, or I just assumed that my life was going to be lonely and miserable. And I think I kind of fed into that a little bit. Like, as I got, I don't know, 24, 25, around that time, my friends started getting married and it became harder to have a social life. And I know that you don't like have to be married to be fulfilled in life. There are plenty of people who live singly and have lives that they're very happy with. But I had kind of accepted this role for myself that I was going to be that really lonely, miserable spinster who never didn't have anybody in life and who was eventually going to be eaten by her dogs.
Better than your cat.
That's right. The church honestly ruined my 20s. It ruined my college experience. It ruined where I went in a career because I had things I said I wanted to pursue, but it's really impossible to effectively pursue things that you want in your life if you have no motivation to have a life. I didn't have energy to put into anything.
It sounds like, listening to you, that you didn't feel like you deserved to be happy.
No, I didn't. I remember feeling like this life was God's way of leading me into submission to accept polygamy in eternity so I could go to the celestial kingdom. I don't think the idea of deserving happiness ever entered into it. I just wasn't going to be happy. I just wasn't going to have things in life that I wanted. And I accepted that until I was like 27. And it really messed up my life. I mean, financially, for a career, I am like 20 years behind everybody else in my career now. By the time I get into doing what I want to do, other people will have been doing it for 20 years, 15 years. There are material things that I want in this life. I grew up horseback riding, and that's something I've wanted to continue in my adult years. And I'll be lucky if by the time I'm 50, I can afford to have a horse again, because I've ruined myself. Not, well, I hate to say ruined myself, but I messed up my career by messing up college.
Well, you've had to sacrifice a lot of the things that you wanted in place of this lack of belonging.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I look back at myself in college and I just want to kick myself. Like, if I had just thought I could be happy in life, I probably would have done the things I needed to do in college to have the career I want to have right now. And I would be a little bit more financially stable than I am right now. And I might have kids right now. You know, like, when you don't care about where your life is going, you don't make any plans. You don't arrange for anything. You don't take any initiative in anything. I had friends in college. I had fun, but I was also pretty depressed. I spent a lot of nights having panic attacks and feeling alone and being depressed. When I graduated college, I was working for the USDA and I had a really good job, and I could have, if I had had some determination, I could have stuck with it and made a career of that. But I was miserable and alone, and all of my friends had their own lives now and were leaving school or having families. And so I decided that the only thing that would really make me happy would be moving to Boise to be near my niece. I had one niece at the time. I have two now, but I decided I'll go live next door and be an awesome aunt, you know, and that will be where I get my little modicum of happiness in this life. So that's what I did. I moved to Boise and hate Boise because of it. And I don't know if Boise is a fun place or not, because it's so tied up in what a miserable experience I had there. While I was in Boise, I was completely inactive, but I got on MySpace because Facebook wasn't open then. MySpace was the thing. And I had a friend who had moved to Seattle and I wanted to stay in touch with her, and she was on MySpace. So I got on MySpace and I joined this Mormon, like they had groups on MySpace,
right.
And I joined a Mormon discussion group on there.
And what motivated you to do that?
I don't know. I was just poking around one day, looking at stuff that they had on MySpace, looking at like the different, because they had these tabs at the top, and I thought, oh, groups, what's this? And I just on a whim, I think, put in Mormon, and it came up with a bunch of them. And
so to be clear, you were completely inactive.
Mm-hmm.
You attributed that largely to polygamy.
Yeah.
You not being, uh-huh. it being an eternal principle that you could not hang with.
Yeah. It was like I had to swallow this big turd,
right,
in order to be active and do what I needed to do. And I just couldn't do it.
But you still believed that it was true.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So you joined this group.
And it was a group of just people talking about Mormonism. I made some of my best friends there. And they are TBMs. Like, all of them are still, I only know of maybe two people who have disaffected out of that group. but they're true believers, but they're not uptight. You know, they're not like, they don't get offended if they see the F word, or they tell dirty jokes and that kind of thing. So they were really fun to be around, and we talked religion. We got into online battles with evangelicals that tried to come in and save our souls, you know, and I became really good friends with all of them. And it was like my spiritual outlet that I could feel like I was being a Mormon without having to focus on the bad stuff.
Okay.
But every once in a while, people would bring up something like, what about masonry, you know? And there'd be an interesting little discussion that I knew nothing of, because that's completely...
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Did that group bring up anything that, you know, when we talk, when a lot of times disaffected Mormons will say, oh, well, when I found out about the Book of Abraham, this is what did it. Or when I found out about, you know, the view of the Hebrews and the church's stance on who the Lamanites are, that's when I started to realize it was. So in this group, I'm sure those things were being talked about. What was your...
The only thing that I remember being talked about was Adam God. And that was shot down quickly as anti-Mormon lies.
Okay.
And masonry in the temple. And my mom had already told me this thing about the reason that the Masons have similar ceremonies to Mormons is because our ceremonies are from, you know, the temple of Solomon. Yeah. So I thought, I'm like, well, yeah, they have a bastardized version of the truth, right?
That's exactly what I was taught.
But there are other, I don't remember anything else. I don't remember the problems with the Book of Abraham coming up. I remember hearing somewhere that the DNA didn't work out for the Book of Mormon. And I don't remember what I thought of it. I thought maybe...
As a science geek, I would think you would jump all over that.
I know, right? It didn't occur to me for some reason. I don't know why.
So this group actually didn't destroy your testimony any further.
No.
It almost kept it intact.
Yes, yes, yes.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. And I went through some weird transitions during that time when I was in Boise. I remember I went to dinner with my sister one night, and I told her that I've decided that for the church leadership, like the prophet and stuff, there's some scripture, and I wish I knew what it was off the top of my head, but I can't. But it's about looking through a pane of glass or something like that. And how, I decided that they're just doing the best they can with their understanding of the world and the gospel, and the type of revelation they receive isn't what we've been taught it is. Like, they're not like palling around with Jesus in the temple. My beliefs were already starting to change a little bit about that. I decided that their inspiration was just as tenuous as mine, I guess. So okay. I was fading away from being a TBM.
Or a traditional, what we think of as a traditional TBM.
Yeah, yep.
So at what point did you, and this might be jumping ahead a little bit, but at what point did you meet your spouse?
I met my spouse in that group, actually. He grew up in Bountiful, and he has been an atheist since he was a teenager. He said about that he can't really pinpoint a time when he decided it was all BS, but he's never really believed.
And wow, as soon as in Bountiful.
He joined the same group because he wanted to stir up trouble.
Oh, we like him already.
Yeah. He came in there to be an anti, and he's like this. He's a, I don't know what the right term for him is. He likes
an antagonist.
Yeah. He gets a kick out of being a bit of a butt. And so we started calling him our friendly neighborhood anti, mostly because he was calling himself Mr. Rogers at the time.
Oh, that's deviant.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember having conversations back and forth with some of my other TBM friends from the group. Like, what do you think of this guy? He's so funny, but he's saying some awful stuff. You know, what do you think of this guy? And all of my friends were like, he's awesome. He's hilarious. You know, like, they weren't intimidated by the things he was saying. And he became one of our really good friends. He left the group because a friend of his had died, and he decided he was wasting too much of his life online and wanted to go out and do other things. And so when he left MySpace, I was like, whoa, wait, where are you going? And I got his email address, and we started emailing back and forth. So that's how I got to know him, like, on a personal level, outside of just our fun interactions on the internet.
So you're in Boise, he's here in Utah.
Mm-hmm, in Bountiful.
And you've created this friendship.
Mm-hmm, yes.
this relationship, dare I say?
I remember we were emailing back and forth, and I was like, I just want to make it clear to you that I can't be in a relationship with you. You know, you're not a believer. This is just friendship. And he's like, all right, whatever. And he's told me since then that I said it all the time. And so he was like, all right, she really likes me. She just knows she shouldn't. So he just kind of put up with it, I guess. But the job I had at the time when I was living in Boise went south. I remember I was in the middle. It was before I quit, but it was in the middle of all of the stuff. And it was some really bad stuff. And I was sitting in my car in the parking lot at the movie theater waiting for my sister to show up. And I remember like just deciding I give up. I can't live this way anymore. It's going nowhere. I guess I decided that if I believed that God was loving, he wouldn't expect it of me. And he would accept that I had decided not to strive for the celestial kingdom. So I decided, screw it. I'm going to go after this guy that I really like. I'm going to live a worldly life, and I'll go to a lower kingdom, and that'll be the end of it. So I ended up quitting my job, and I moved out here to pursue a relationship with him. And that's where the definite end of trying to be a good Mormon happened. It was in my car that night.
So tell me what that transition was like. Now, so you're away from home, you've made a decision. I'm guessing it wasn't an easy decision, or it wasn't a decision that just like turn it off like a light switch, or turn, you know, it couldn't have been an instant sense of relief for you.
I got down here at the end of January of 08. I like cashed out my 401k, took all of my savings, and came down here without even a job. I got a job that supported myself, and I was dating him, and I started to get happy. I came out of my depression and I was happy with life. I didn't perceive myself as being different, but my sister says it was like night and day when I left behind the things that were ruining my life. So I think as soon as I started to become happy, I quit caring. It was just easier to...
You became not your authentic self.
Yeah, definitely.
And I've seen you with your spouse, and how long have you been married?
We got married in August of 2010, so closing in on 2 years.
Okay, and you guys are still attached at every possible appendage. The two of you are still the cutest goddamn thing I've seen in a long time. And how has he helped you accept your authentic self?
Well, I was really, like, I don't know. I asked him about this tonight at dinner. There was more than one time where I said to him, just so we're clear, I can only be with you because I can't be a good Mormon. I look back on that now and I'm like, oh, like, why would you say that to somebody?
You're such a jerk, Heather.
Like, it makes me sound like I'm settling for you because I can't get a good righteous Mormon boy, right? But I wanted to be completely honest, all cards on the table. And I asked him if that insulted him, and he's like, are you kidding me? No. I probably shouldn't say this on the air. Oh, well. He's like, back when I had my long hair, you know, there'd be these chicks who'd be like, I could never be with a guy with long hair. And the next thing you know, I'd be banging him. So it was more like, that's right. I'm so irresistible that you're willing to give up your Mormonism for me. That's kind of how he viewed it. So he never really viewed it as insulting, but he married me as a believer. Prop 8 was horrible, obviously, for everybody, and it pissed me off. And not only that, maybe it's not the same for TBMs, but if you're struggling with testimony, the last thing you should do is move to Utah. It will nails in your belief, being up close and personal with the church. Seeing the way they have their fingers in politics around here, City Creek, Prop 8, it was just, I still believed it was all true, but I hated the people, you know?
Yeah.
So we went through Prop 8, and I look back on that time, and I'm annoyed with myself even then, because I couldn't support the church. I had a friend that was staying with me off and on when he came into town on business, and he is actually one of the people from that group. And I was telling him, I fear for my eternal soul more than I ever did, because I cannot trust in my leaders. I think I said something like, I can't let go of the arm of the flesh and just support my leaders. I put too much value in my own set of ethics, and I won't go against those because my leaders tell me to. But at the same time, I remember having a conversation with my husband, who was at that time my boyfriend, saying, no, I don't believe people will be gay in eternity. And my, I know, right? And he was like, are you kidding me?
But who will decorate heaven?
And I was like, no, I think it's a thing that you're just subject to here in this life. And at the same time, I thought those people should be in relationships. I thought they should be able to get married. I did not see their sex as sinful. I just thought they'd be with women. And I don't know how I wrap my mind around it now. Like, it seems ludicrous now. But
that's what the church does to you. It twists everything around.
Yeah,
ludicrous things are tolerable, and tolerable things end up being incredibly ludicrous.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. But I remember him just being like, but that's part of who they are. So he put up with some annoying crap from me as a believer, I guess.
Well, you're a thinker. You're a multi-level thinker. You are not a surface person in any way, shape, or form. And anyone who meets you within the first 5 minutes knows that there's a whole lot going on with you under the surface. I know that when I first met you, mm-hmm. I was a little bit afraid to be your friend.
Really?
Because, one, you're incredibly smart, and that's just obvious. But you seem to be a person that really expects people to be on their game and to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And that
I've had problems with that, actually.
Yeah. Well,
expecting too much from people.
Oh, no, I don't think it's too much. I think that it's probably what we should all expect of people, mm-hmm. is to, if you're going to show up to play, mm-hmm. play hard. Mm-hmm. Bring your A game. And that's what I like about you, though. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons why we get along so well, is mm-hmm. I think that we share that in common. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I was terrified of that.
I was terrified to be your friend because I don't think I'm cool enough.
Oh, Jesus. So, but I also know this about you, is that in listening to you tonight, you're really hard on yourself.
Yeah.
Why?
I think it's my nature. I don't know why. I know it's probably not an answer that's easy to take somewhere, but I think it's just my nature.
But while you still hold people to a high standard, you're not as hard on others as you are on yourself.
That's probably true. Maybe it's because I'm inside my own head and I know, like, my own...
Like, you know what you're really thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I know how in the year before I got married, I lost 70 pounds and I've gained it all back since then. And I know what's going on in my head and why I'm not losing it.
Right.
Like, I know I'm lazy and I know that I need to get off my butt. You know, I feel like I know what I need to change. And so I should damn well change it. I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm not subject to other people's thoughts. And so I give them a benefit of the doubt that I don't give myself because I know my own thoughts, maybe. I'm not sure.
I'm going to let you have the benefit of my doubt. And you just soften up a little.
Yeah, I probably should.
So you and spousal are married.
Mm-hmm.
You're desperately in love.
Mm-hmm.
And when did you finally say, that's it? I'm done.
This is something else I talked about with my husband tonight before I came over here. I cannot figure out what happened. I don't remember really. I spend a lot, like, if somebody just asks me, I'll say it's that conference talk with Boyd K. Packer.
Why would a loving God do this?
I would say that is what ended things. But I was looking at the Blogger Knackle before that. The only experience in my, if I were to say that I had a spiritual experience, the only thing I could point to in my life is listening to the, I can't think of his first name now, Toscano.
Oh, Margaret's husband.
Yes.
And that's the feminist in me. I identify him through his wife. I can't even think of
Robert
his name.
Robert Toscano? That doesn't sound right.
No.
Anyway, somebody posted a, like, you know how Mormon Stories is, there's like several clips, mm-hmm. or several sections of the episode. Somebody posted one of the sections on a blog, and I listened to it knowing that he was one of the September 6 and wanting to know what he had to say. And then I went and listened to all of it, and I remember I was driving home in my car, and it was the most profound spiritual experience I'd ever had in my entire life. And he was yelling at John DeLynn about Boyd K. Packer. and about all the things the church gets wrong. But he was also talking about Paul Toscano. Yes.
Paul Toscano.
Paul Toscano. And he was talking about like what the garments actually symbolized, and the way he was talking about them made me actually want to go to the temple. But you can't say as a good Mormon that your most profound spiritual experience is listening to one of the September 6 yell about what's wrong with the church.
No, I can dig that. I can see.
Yeah.
It's the bare bones honesty, I think, that members really want. Mm-hmm. And even those mm-hmm. of us that have left, I think we would have stayed.
If the church had been like that?
If they had just been honest.
Yeah. Yeah. So my husband and I got married at a lake in Idaho, and I had to find somebody to marry us, because I wasn't active in my ward down here. And actually, that's kind of a weird situation where he didn't really want to be married. He's one of these people that thinks that marriage is just a piece of paper. And so he just wanted to move in together and not get married. But he knew that it was something that was important to me. So he was willing to get married anyway. So he could live with me, I guess.
And bang you.
As if that wasn't already going on. So I needed to find somebody to do the ceremony, because it's really rural up there and you're going to have to like truck somebody in. Well, and there's weird church rules about that. It either has to be the bishop of your ward that you're in the boundaries of, or it can be your home ward bishop, you know, if you're in college or whatever. So I went looking for somebody that was up there in the Sun Valley area, and I found this guy who's the, I don't know, pastor of one of those non-denominational, touchy-feely, really liberal Christian churches. And when I talked to him on the phone, and this was in March before I got married, so it was way before that conference, I told him that I was wondering what his requirements were for the spirituality in the ceremony, because my spouse-to-be is an atheist, and I'm a really bad, not very good, don't really believe it Mormon. So, I mean, I was already falling out of it, I guess. I did an interview for a series that Rich is doing for Mormon Expression, where I interviewed Elisa and Chris. Uh-huh. And Elisa said that she would have these moments where she would be like, oh, but that doesn't matter because I'm an atheist. Oh my goodness, what am I thinking? I'm not an atheist. And I was doing the same thing through that year before I got married, where because of Prop 8, I was having these battles within myself. And I remember driving to work and having the same thoughts, like, well, this doesn't really matter because I don't believe it. Wait, what? I totally believe this. What am I talking about? You know? And so I think I was conflicted and battling with that constantly. Then that session of General Conference happened, and he said, why would a loving God do this? And I was like, that's it. Either God doesn't talk to Boyd K. Packer and is willing to let him get up and make an ass of himself in front of the entire world, or there is no God. Which is it? And I had already put away a belief in mainstream Christianity a long time ago. I don't like the God of Christianity. So I knew, as even as a teenager, that if I ever fell away from the church, Christianity was out. I would be an atheist. So it was really quick after that. Just, well, God doesn't exist. So there you go. And that was kind of the end of my belief.
And so that was about what year?
That was the conference of 2010.
That's right. So October.
Yep.
So during your disaffection / trying to be a good Mormon, during these kind of back and forths that you were having with yourself, what was your relationship like with your parents?
The way it's played out has been kind of weird. I had an idyllic childhood. I wish every kid could have the childhood I had. I don't think my parents were... I love my parents. They're great people, but I don't think they were as great with teenagers as some people are. There was a lot of tension and struggle in that time. They were always like, you have your free agency. You get to choose whether or not you go to the Wednesday night activity. But agency always comes with a consequence. And the consequence of not choosing to go to Young Women's on Wednesday nights was that you lost your free agency and they made you go anyway.
Brilliant.
If that made any sense. I would tease my parents about it, kind of, but it never made a difference. I still had to go to the Wednesday night activity. But when I got into college, I moved away for school, and so they didn't really have any control over my life, and they knew that I was basically inactive. And so my mom, we went through for years. I don't know why this went on for years, but she would call on Sunday to ask me if I was going to church or if I'd been to church. And for a long time, I would either lie or we would have a disagreement about it. or I was going and my mom was happy about it.
And also, just to make sure the audience realizes this, you being inactive in college did not mean you went out and partied.
No.
Did not mean you went out and smoked pot. Did not mean you, you know, went out dancing at discotheques in short skirts.
I did go to a drag show.
Oh, well, hello. But this was not you being inactive did not equal rebellious drug addict prostitute.
I had the most boring college years. I didn't do anything bad. So no, it was just she wanted to see if I was going to church and, you know, and I think they knew I wasn't doing anything bad. I think they know how bullheaded I am and not willing to be peer pressured into anything. But yeah, she would call, ask if I'd been to church. And for maybe 3 years, I would pick up the phone every single time and we'd either get into a disagreement or I would lie or I would have actually been to church. After about 2 or 3 years of that, I stopped answering the phone at all on Sundays. And then they came up for my undergraduate graduation. My mom and I went to get a movie and we got into a disagreement about the church somehow. And she was like, what am I supposed to do? Just consider you an apostate for the rest of your life? I said something like, well, your guilt has done nothing to get me to go to church to this point. So maybe it's time you realize that, yeah, you should, because it's not going to do any good. And so from that point forward, there was no discussion of religion between my parents and I. There was one time that my dad got really upset with me and yelled at me about what I should be doing. He was asking me why I wouldn't go to the temple. And I told him, and he was like, but that doesn't mean you couldn't be doing genealogy work and helping other people do temple work. This is your obligation, you know. But besides those things, religion was just like an unspoken. It's taboo. We don't talk about it. And my relationship with my parents got really strained. It was really uncomfortable to be around them. And a lot of that might have just been my depression. I don't know. But when I moved down here to Utah to take a chance on my husband, they didn't know about him. They didn't even know he existed because I was worried that my relationship with them was so strained because I wasn't being a good Mormon that finding out that I was dating and in love with an atheist would kill my relationship with them. You hear of so many people who have really no relationship with their family anymore. I thought that was what would happen to me. But my car was having problems and my parents wanted to buy me a new car. And I felt like it would be wrong to allow them to do that when I was living my life in a way that I knew that they wouldn't be happy about. So I just out and said, I can't take your money because I'm not living my life in a way that you'd be happy about. I have a boyfriend. And as soon as they found out about him, our relationship, again, immediately became better. Any problem that we used to have is gone. And in my head, I think that that's because they finally gave up on me being a good Mormon. They've accepted that this is who I am. And so it's not in the relationship anymore. And they just accept me for who I am now, I guess.
And do they acknowledge and recognize that you're a good person?
Yeah, I think
minus so. Minus the Mormon.
I think so. Nope. The problem is they don't know that I'm an atheist. Like dun, that's, dun, dun, I dun. Know. When I moved down here, they thought I was a believer. And I was a believer. And so up until that point, their conception of who I was accurate, which was that I believe it's true, but that I just can't live it. People have asked me like what my parents' reaction was to getting married to an atheist. And I was worried that they would be upset about it and say something to me. They didn't say one word. They were really supportive and loving about the whole thing. I'm sure they were disappointed that I didn't get married in the temple. I remember asking my sister, why haven't they said anything? She's like, Heather, you're finally happy. They finally see that you're happy and have a good life. That's all they want.
No, that's good.
So it's been my relationship because of my husband has been completely healed. And I worry that if they find out that I really don't believe, that they'll blame it on my husband, I guess. And that will put back in place the problems that were there before or the elephant in the room that seems to be gone now. And I don't want that to happen. So haven't really told them that I'm not a believer anymore. Unfortunately, I feel bad about that in some ways. I don't care in other ways, I guess.
Yeah. So you started as a panelist with Mormon Expression in 2011. So, and what brought you to Mormon Expression? How did you get involved?
Dr. Laura,
what?
I listen to tons of talk radio. I listen to conservative evangelical talk radio. And I grew up listening to Rush Limbaugh and Dr. Laura and, oh crap, what's his name? The guy from Nixon's guy, that went to prison, G. Gordon Liddy. And I mean, I listened to all those guys, and I'll still sometimes listen to Rush Limbaugh. I was listening to Glenn Beck way before Glenn Beck was a national crazy guy.
Way before
guy.
He was an ass.
Way before he lost his ever-loving mind.
Oh my gosh.
I stopped being able to listen to Rush Limbaugh on a consistent basis when I was about 20.
Probably when he stopped taking all the Vicodin.
Right. You know what? Probably. So, but I would still, at work, I would pull on Dr. Laura when she came on the air, and I would listen to her for 3 hours a day.
No, I'm sorry, but what was it about Dr. Laura that let you sit through 3 hours of anything she has to say?
I think
because that's a woman that does not make you feel good about yourself.
Oh, I agree. She's a bitch.
So why were you attracted to that, having had that deep kind of, I didn't get it right. I can't be a good Mormon, but you want to listen to Dr. Laura tell you about how you're completely messed up on a whole nother level.
I'm a contrarian. Like, why do I listen to evangelical talk radio now? It drives me crazy. Like, I get irritated and angry about it. I think I like it.
I personally love the Jesus water commercials.
Yeah.
And like the holy prayer rag or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Okay. So Dr. Laura, take me there.
She had a scandal that ended up with her going off the air.
I remember that.
And so I had 3 hours of emptiness to fill in my day.
Oh my God.
And I started listening to This American Life. I found out that they had a podcast online. And so I started devouring This American Life all day, every day. And that can only last for so long. I went looking for other things out there. And I went back to that Paul Toscano interview that I had listened to. And when I went back to that Paul Toscano interview, the next episode I listened to was that live event thing that he and John did, Mormon Expression. It was the Mormon Expression live event that John DeLint ended up being on because his name was drawn out of a hat or something. So I found Mormon Expression that day because I went back to look at the stuff that was on Mormon Stories other than Paul Toscano. And so I immediately started listening to Mormon Stories and Mormon Expression.
Were just you an instant convert like I was?
To Mormon Expression? Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. And then at that time, he was always going on about how there's no women on the podcast.
He meaning John Larson. Okay.
I was kind of like, well, maybe I should volunteer. No, I couldn't do that kind of thing. I mean, as much as of a contrarian as I am, I don't know if I could do that kind of thing. And then the 14 Fundamentals podcast came out, and my husband and I went on a drive just because I wanted him to listen to it so bad, and he loved that episode. And
it's
so,
a great episode.
Yeah, it's still one of my favorites, I think.
Mine too.
Yeah. So we went on a drive, and afterwards he's like, contact him, email him. So I put it off for a little while, and then I eventually did, and he invited us to be in studio for the 100th episode, and he asked me a question in that episode, so I'm actually on that one. And then I told him that I'd like to participate and that I'd be happy to do anything behind the scenes. I'll do the grunt work, give me whatever you want to do. And then he invited me to be on some episodes. And then the next thing, I was part of the show. So.
And now you are our voices, yes. Producer, creator.
Director, I think, is my title. Yeah.
Mostly editor.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how this podcast or how this interview is going to turn out, considering you get to edit it.
Well, since it's your interview, you should probably have to approve the final out.
I think that you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Aside from what you had said about your 20s, mm-hmm. what would you say to that girl?
I'd slap her.
No, you wouldn't.
Yes, I would. If
you
I could.
Hug her? I want to hug her.
Well, I'm hard on myself, remember?
Okay. Well, now knowing what you know now.
I would both slap and hug myself. I go through these phases where I get really angry about some of the things in my life that I wish were different. If I could go back and show myself that the church isn't true, I would. I would regain my 20s. I'd be in a situation where I could buy a home and have children and all those kinds of things now.
So that path is just, it's just a little farther off. You still have that path to walk.
Yeah, yeah, I do. I mean, if I'm lucky, by the time I'm 40, I'll be teaching. We're working on it. I'll get there eventually. Maybe if I'm lucky, by the time I'm 45, I'll have a house. We're going to do foster care. We'll probably adopt kids out of foster care, but it'll just be I'll have missed out on 20 years that I could have done that. I'll only get a smaller number of years to do those things, but I'll be happy for them. I don't resent the life I have now. I just wish that I got to have more of it. Maybe that makes me greedy. I don't know.
No, I know what you mean. I know what it's, I relate to the feeling of what could have been had so much time not been taken up by this internal spiritual struggle.
Oh yeah.
That in the end turned out to be a lie.
We're not worth it. Like, it totally ate up my 20s for no good reason. Yeah, it makes me angry. I have to not think about it very much or I get really angry.
Definitely in the last 2 years, you've become a happy person.
I think I've been happy since 2008. Yes.
I keep thinking it's the year 2000. And that it's 2000. Only been 2 years since you got involved with Le Lover.
Yeah, nope. I've known him for 7, going on 7 years.
So all in all, there's nothing you would give up for this.
No, I would not go back to that for anything. So I guess I am satisfied with where I am now.
Yay. Okay, everyone. Well, this has been an interview with Heather, who's our voices producer. It's been wonderful. Thank you for letting me interview you.
Yeah, of course.
All right, everyone, you can follow this on MormonExpression.com/voices, and we'll say goodnight.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you.
And letting go has not been easy, but I don't need you loving me for who you think I should be. No, I'm standing here at the end of who I once was, not sure yet of who come. Oh, but I'm feeling brave. I got nothing to lose. I'm so beautiful as I make no excuse. And I move to the edge and I take my grave leave. It doesn't matter if I fall, it's time to be. Oh, let her be. Yeah, and I'm not looking for
Directing, producing, and editing was done by Heather C., and the theme music was provided by McCall Erickson. Thank you for listening. Mormon Expression Voices is a production of the Whitefields Educational Foundation. Find us on the web at whitefieldseducational.org. The Mormon Expression and Mormon Expression Voices podcasts, as well as other educational initiatives, are made possible by your generous donations. Please consider a subscription today.